This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
Next on What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
A lot of headwinds. Polling places are closing in the Georgia Senate runoff.
Key race. But again, right, we're looking at probably a 3.3, right, which again, these are record numbers, guys, especially for a runoff in a midterm election.
This is exactly what Democrats want to see. They exceeded their number in Douglas. We changed it.
I'm Paul Fisher.
To utter the four most powerful words ever spoken in a democracy.
Take it easy with my heart, easy with my heart.
The people have spoken.
Had a tough journey, have we not? But one of the things I said is when they called the race, I said the numbers doesn't look like they're going to add up. But one of the things I want to tell all of you is you never stop dreaming. I don't want any of you to stop dreaming. I don't want any of you to stop believing in America. I want you to believe in America and continue to believe in the Constitution and believe in our elected officials most of all.
Days of the final Senate race of campaign 2022. The Georgia runoff between Walker and Warnock. You could see the tactics at play.
Walker will vote for Georgia, not be another rubber stamp for Joe Biden. That's why I'm backing Herschel.
Governor Kemp, who kept his distance from the Trump-backed Herschel Walker during his own campaign to be reelected governor.
Take it easy with my heart, easy with my heart.
Kemp finally endorsed Walker in the runoff. And even campaigned for him in a TV ad.
And I hope you'll join me in voting for him, too.
Senate Leadership Fund is responsible for the content of the Senate.
Trump was nowhere to be seen in Georgia, stumping for Walker.
Take it easy with my heart.
Walker was asked about Trump not campaigning for him in Georgia on Fox News, of all places.
That president... Trump is not coming to have a rally in this last week before the final election day. And meanwhile, you got Obama campaigning with Warnock.
You know, President Trump has always been in my corner. He still is in my corner. And he's been doing other things for me. And everyone has been doing a lot of things for me.
So while Trump was advised to make himself scarce in Georgia, Obama was welcomed back in to campaign for Warnock, for obvious reasons.
Since the last time I was here, Mr. Walker has been talking about issues that are of great importance to the people of Georgia, like whether it's better to be a vampire or a werewolf.
There are those who would look at the outcome of this race and say that there's no voter suppression in Georgia. Let me be clear. Just because people endured long lines that wrapped around buildings, some blocks long, just because they endured the rain and the cold and all kinds of tricks in order to vote, doesn't mean that voter suppression does not exist. It simply means that you, the people, have decided that your voices will not be silenced.
Your love
I am waiting for the next available agent.
Late this afternoon, in just the last few hours, a special hearing. Two Cochise County supervisors voting to certify the results of the 2022 general election.
It wasn't just Georgia that dragged the midterms all the way into December.
I'll continue to hold. You are experiencing a higher number of calls than normal. All agents are busy. I have been placed in a queue. My call will be answered by...
In Arizona, the two Republicans on the Cochise County Board of Supervisors voted over the one Democrat.
You are sorry about the wait, but as soon as...
And refused to certify the wins for Katie Hobbs as governor and another Democrat as Secretary of State, instead of election deniers Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham.
But as soon as the next available agent is free, he will put me...
Who refused to concede.
I think it's a service that doesn't need to have to happen. I've had enough. I think the public's had enough. And so I'm asking for a swift resolution to this, if that's possible, sir.
You are working hard to get to me. I will stay on the line. You will be with me as quickly as possible.
It took a court order to get one of the Republicans on the Cochise board to join the one Democrat in certifying the election. The second Republican on the board was a no-show.
You will put me straight through. My call is important to you.
Will meet today. We will canvass the election no later than 5 o'clock.
As quickly as possible. You are sorry about the wait.
Can't say enough about the how important this effort is that we made.
You will put me straight through.
And I am not ashamed of anything I did.
A judge also tossed out the election challenge brought by lawyers for Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham.
It's free. You will put me straight through.
On the baseless claims of voting machine fraud.
By the way, my call is important to you.
The judge telling them in no uncertain terms that they could be punished for filing a frivolous lawsuit.
These signed and sealed documents now constitute the official canvas and results of the November 8th, 2022 general election.
Days later, Arizona finally certified the results.
Based on the official canvas, my office and the governor's office have also prepared the certificate of election for U.S. Senator. And the proclamation of the governor, the proclamation by the governor declaring the ballot measures approved by the voters. All right, everyone, thank you so much. This concludes the official canvass of the November 8th, 2022 general election. And I just want to once again thank the voters of Arizona. Because of your participation, our democratic institutions thrived. Stay engaged and keep voting. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Stage is now set for more lawsuits. The trial jury in New York found the Trump Organization guilty on all 17 counts of tax fraud and falsifying business records in the case brought by the Manhattan DA's office. It's yet another case of Trump being linked to wrongdoing, but without being held personally accountable. Seems to happen a lot. Speaking of which... It's surprising that this late in the game, people seem to forget what Trump's game is. Namely, when he does something so outrageous that even Republicans in Congress are forced to comment on it. Trump, rather than retreat and be contrite, tries to change the subject by saying or doing something even more outrageous. Case in point, after Trump's My Dinner with Kanye moment, forced GOP members of Congress to say something, in many cases after ducking the cameras for days until they just couldn't any longer. They did denounce the Hitler lovers, the dinner invite, but not the guy who invited them. So as he often does, Trump got even more outrageous, saying it's time to terminate the Constitution and reinstall him as president. The GOP Congress response? Lather, rinse, repeat.
Congressman-elect, what is your reaction to Donald Trump calling for the termination of the U.S. Constitution?
Well, obviously, I don't support that. The Constitution is set for a reason. To protect the rights of every American. And so I certainly don't endorse that language or that sentiment. I think the question for everyone is how we move forward. You know, I ran for Congress to address the challenges that we're facing and be forward-looking. Frankly, I think people are tired of looking backwards. I think people are tired of discussing the grievances of prior elections, and they want to know what we're going to do to address the challenges. And I think the former president would be well advised to focus on the future if he is going
to
run for president.
I have to ask you a question about Donald Trump's statement yesterday talking about suspending the Constitution. Your reaction?
Well, you know, when President Trump was in office, I didn't make a habit of speaking out of his tweet du jour. I don't know what came out on his, whatever his new social platform is, but, you know, people were not interested in looking backwards. The people who gave us the majority, and again, we barely won it. We barely eked it out, so let's be straight about where we're at. They gave us an opportunity, and we need to perform, and we need to care about the issues that they care about. Which is, how do they lower the cost at the pump? Now, I know when I go into Heinen's that the price of everything I buy, eggs, bacon, toast, it all goes up, right? It hasn't gone down. And again, people have to live within a budget. What are we doing to make sure that they fall within that budget? What are we doing to make sure that their lives are better? And how do we continue to make sure that they have the jobs and the economy is stable and they have the jobs to be able to live and take care of their families?
But Donald Trump was your nominee in 2016 and 2020. You voted for him in 2016 and 2020. Now he's talking about suspending the Constitution. Can you support a candidate in 2024 who's for suspending the Constitution?
Well, again, it's early. I think there's going to be a lot of people in the primary. I think at the end of the day, you will say whoever the Republicans end up pick, I'll fall in behind because that's...
Even if it's Donald Trump and he's called for suspending the Constitution?
Well, again, I think it's going to be a big field. I don't think Donald Trump's going to clear out the field like he did in the 60s.
That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you if he's the nominee that you support him.
I will support whoever the Republican nominee is. And I just don't think that at this point he'll be able to get there because I think there's a lot of other good quality candidates out there.
That's a remarkable statement. You'd support a candidate who's come out for suspending the Constitution?
Well, you know, he says a lot of things. You have to take him in context. And right now, I have to worry about making sure as a Republican governance group and a Republican majority that we make things work for American people. And I can't be really chasing every one of these crazy statements that come out about from any of these candidates at the moment.
But that's an extraordinary statement. You can't come out against someone who's for suspending the Constitution.
Well, first off, it has no ability to suspend the Constitution. Secondly,
but he says he's for it.
Well, you know, he says a lot of things that, but that doesn't mean that it's ever going to happen. And so you got to accept exact fact from fantasy. And fantasy is that we're going to suspend the Constitution and go backwards. We're moving forward. And we're going to continue to move forward as a Republican majority and as a Republican conference.
Uphold the Constitution. Does calling for its suspension, is that disqualifying for a presidential candidate?
It's certainly not consistent with the question. I do. It's certainly not consistent with the oath that we all take.
So yesterday, the front runner for the Republican nomination, the standard bearer for your party, posted on Truth Social, and we know he lost the 2020 election, but continues to claim he did not. A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Should the standard bearer for the Republican Party, the front runner for the nomination for the presidency for your party in 2024, say this?
Well, you know, I first of all, I vehemently disagree with the statement that Trump has made. Trump has made, you know, 1,000 statements in which I disagree. There is a political process that has to go forward before anybody
Constitutional conservatives are pretty clear about where they value the Constitution.
Right, exactly.
But is there any scenario with suspending the Constitution?
You do get to pick the questions, but I do get to pick my answer.
I'm trying to get you to answer the question I'm asking.
There is a political process that has to go forward before anybody's a front runner or anybody is a the candidate for the party.
And Do you think that, saying something like this?
Absolutely. And I believe, answering your question, that people certainly are going to take into consideration a statement like this as they evaluate a candidate.
I also have to ask you about the other statement and the people that he has been spending time with. A neo-Nazi, pro-Putin misogynist named Nick Fuentes came to have dinner with the former president at his home alongside Kanye West, who just this past week praised Hitler.
This is atrocious. This is true. Everybody, I think everyone, it both condemns and is shocked and is as disgusted and nauseated by the fact that we're even in this year, you know, in 2022, having anyone that could make statements like that. Nevertheless, have anybody who would engage in a conversation with someone who's making statements like that.
So having classified documents at the same place where they're having the dinner, which were not securely held, and their government records that should be in government property, all those things together, the problem.
Well, as you know, the FBI raided his home, but there are not classified documents there. But all of these are issues of judgment.
The premise of saying he doesn't know who he's having dinner with at that home.
These are all issues of judgment, and a political process has to go forward. And I believe voters are smart, and they'll take those things into consideration in a political process.
Senators John Cornyn and Lindsey Graham and Josh Hawley and Rick Scott, who denounced dinners with Hitler lovers while ignoring the guy who hosted them. Well, on Trump's attack on elections and the Constitution, second verse, same as the first.
Who's going to run? I think it's certainly irresponsible.
He's running.
I guess he is until he isn't.
The voters will determine who's going to be the nominee for the Republican Party, who will be the president.
I'll leave that to the voters to decide. But look, guys, I think it's disqualifying for Joe Biden and his press team to go out and say from the podium that here's a list of people that they want banned from social media.
second straight week you've come out to begin your press conference criticizing Donald Trump. Can you say categorically that you would not support him if you were the Republican nominee?
What I'm saying is it would be pretty hard to be sworn in to the presidency not willing to uphold the Constitution. That's what I said, and I just said it again.
What about your personal support?
Senator McConnell, the family of Brian Sicknick chose not to shake your hand at today's ceremony, and they said it's because they're concerned you have not done enough to call out former President Trump's actions after January 6th and leading up to it.
I would respond by saying today we gave the gold medal to the heroes of January 6th. We admire and respect them. They laid their lives on the line, and that's why we gave a gold medal today to the heroes of January 6th.
You don't need to be a journalist to notice that Mega MAGA World and associated Trumpers are rushing to side with Elon Musk in the Twitter wars. It's interesting because these groups that ban books from libraries, forbid topics in classrooms, and omit facts from history, these same people now want to tell you that quitting Twitter, pulling your ads, and not carrying Twitter are violations of free speech. To that end, MAGAworld is targeting one billionaire media company, Apple, for threatening to pull the app for another billionaire media company, Twitter. This love for Twitter follows the Elon Musk takeover, which now includes allowing Trump back on if he wants to. Along with many others previously banned for abusive content, and Musk Twitter quietly dropping its policy against medical disinformation on COVID. So for MAGAworld, what's not to like? This is billionaire Elon Musk's personal take on free speech, which apparently doesn't include anyone else's free speech right not to support it. Fits right in with House GOP leader and speaker wannabe Kevin McCarthy, who needs every vote he can get from the Freedom Caucus to get the speakership.
Yes, sir.
Keeping an eye on Twitter under Elon Musk's ownership.
That is offensive to me. Government's going to go after someone that wants to have free speech? Twitter about? Do they want to go more after American public about whether they can have an opinion on something? I think the American public have spoken on this. I think our First Amendment stands up, and I think they should stop picking on Elon Musk. You know, Elon Musk has succeeded in many places. I'd bet on him more than government going after you. And one thing I would say when we talk about accountability, we'll no longer let government go after people simply because of their...
Support for Elon Musk Twitter also fits with GOP nominee wannabe Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor. Who got away with punishing Disney for complaining about the governor's anti-gay policies, taking away Disney's tax breaks in the state. Likewise, DeSantis wants to punish Apple for not supporting Twitter. By spotlighting Apple's business with China.
Seeing that go on in China, you know, there's reports that Apple is not allowing the protesters to use this airdrop function where they're trying to communicate. That obviously is providing aid and comfort to the CCP. And so you see that report, and that's very concerning. And then when you also hear reports that Apple is threatening to remove App Store because Elon Musk is actually opening it up for free speech and is restoring a lot of accounts that were unfairly and illegitimately suspended for putting out accurate information about COVID. That's like one of the main things that's being reinstated. So many things these experts were wrong at, and you had people on Twitter that were calling that out. And Twitter, the old regime in Twitter, their response was to try to just suffocate the dissent. And Elon Musk knows that's not a winning formula, and so he's providing free speech. And so if Apple responds to that by nuking them... I think that that would be a huge, huge mistake, and it would be a really raw exercise of monopolistic power that I think would merit a response from the United States Congress. And so don't be a vassal of the CCP on one hand and then use your corporate power in the United States on the other to suffocate Americans and try to suppress their right to express themselves. And so I'm glad things are changing at Twitter. And I know there's a lot of work to do with big tech generally, but this is big progress, and we're really happy that that is now happening.
In the midst of all this, Musk said he met with Apple's Tim Cook and announced there was no truth to the two things he accused Apple of doing. There was no plan by Apple to remove the Twitter app, and that Apple did not quit advertising on Twitter. Of course, MAGAWorld also likes the fact that Biden and Elon Musk have been feuding. Biden took a shot at Musk over Tesla a while back, when Musk criticized Biden's handling of the economy.
Elon Musk is talking about that. Ford is increasing their investment overwhelmingly. I think Ford is increasing the investment in building new electric vehicles, 6,000 new employees, union employees, I might add, in the Midwest. The former Chrysler Corporation, Stellantis, they are also making similar investments in electric vehicles. Intel is adding 20,000 new jobs for making computer chips. Lots of luck on this trip to the moon.
And now Team Biden is publicly critical of Musk's idea of free speech on Twitter.
Twitter, there's a researcher at Stanford who says that this is a critical moment, really, in terms of ensuring that Twitter does not become a vector for misinformation. I mean, are you concerned about Elon Musk says there's more and more subscribers coming online. Are you concerned about that? And what tools do you have? Who is it at the White House that is really keeping track of this?
Something that we're certainly keeping an eye on. And we have always been very clear and that when it comes to social media platforms, it is their responsibility. To make sure that when it comes to misinformation, when it comes to the hate that we're seeing, that they take action, that they continue to take action again. We're all keeping a close eye on this. We're all monitoring what's currently occurring. We see it with our own eyes of what you all are reporting, and just for ourselves, what's happening on Twitter. But But again, the social media companies have a responsibility to prevent their platforms. From being used by any user to incite violence. Especially violence directed at individual communities. As we have been seeing, and the president has been very clear on calling that out, he'll continue to do that, and we're going to continue to monitor the situation. Go ahead.
Hello, I'm Dan Rather, and you're listening to What's the Frequency, Kenneth? With musical host Paul Fisher in New York City.
Of course, one of the things that makes a lot of people queasy about Apple's business in China, and it's not just Trumpers, it's things like that video from one of the hotspots in China for protests against China's zero COVID lockdown policy, a city that's basically one big iPhone factory. Some of the protesters there have gone so far as to demand more basic freedoms and demand the ouster of President Xi, who just won himself an unprecedented third term with a blurry expiration date. When there's trouble at the iPhone factory over there, there's trouble for people who want to buy iPhones over here. And of course, it's not just Apple. So unrest over there in China means supply chain problems over here. Mixed in with China's ability to collect and mine data from U.S. business, the military, and individuals, and affect the U.S. economy. So it's a balancing act when it comes to U.S. criticism of China by the White House.
But the president has explicitly drawn a contrast between autocracy and democracy here and also abroad. Isn't this a moment, obviously without getting into some sort of grand conflict, to sort of assert the rights of people advocating for freedom and democracy more forcefully than perhaps we have?
This is, I think, a moment to reassert. What we believe in when it comes to free assembly and peaceful protest. And we've done that, and we'll continue to do that, whether it's people protesting in Iran or China or anywhere else around the world. Nothing's changed about the president's firm belief in the power of democracy and democratic institutions and how important that is. But this is really a moment, to put it back into your words, this is a moment for the Chinese people and the Chinese government to speak to. We have been nothing but clear and consistent, and I think you'll see that going forward.
Why is the White House's line that everybody has the right to peacefully protest and not the U.S. thinks it's bad to lock people up in their houses to stop COVID?
We've made it clear, Peter, that a lockdown is not a policy that we're going to support here. We've come a long way over these last 3 years, hard to believe 3 years, in terms of treating COVID and preventing COVID. So we've said, a lockdown is not a policy that we support here. But obviously there are people in China that have concerns about that, and they're protesting that, and we believe they should be able to do that.
Hard to say whether it's working. addition to tracking and punishing protesters through their social media posts, Beijing also seems to be easing some of those lockdowns.
It's unfortunate that Republicans have chosen to focus on me.
Could the contrast be any starker? House Democrats making a smooth transition from years of leadership in their 80s to new leaders ready to move.
House Democrats are going to focus on solving problems for the American people.
You did say that history will never accept Donald Trump as a legitimate president, and the Republicans are making quite a big issue out of that. What is your response?
Well, here's the Republican playbook. Facts don't matter. Hypocrisy is not a constraint to their behavior. And in many cases, they believe that shamelessness is a superpower. My view of the situation has been pretty clear. I supported the certification of Donald Trump's election. I attended his inauguration, even though there were many constituents and others across the country pushing me and others to do otherwise, and found ways to work with the Trump administration, being the lead Democrat in negotiating historic criminal justice reform. That track record speaks for itself. At the same time, I will never hesitate in criticizing the former president. I think I'm in good company there throughout the world.
You know, we represent a caucus that is historically diverse in all ways, and that includes geography. And what we have demonstrated over the last 4 years that we have been in leadership working together as a team is that we reach across our Democratic caucus to make sure that those perspectives are brought to the table. We put people together with solutions.
So many Republicans who are tied to this MAGA extremism, we're talking about putting conditions on Ukrainian aids. We can't have that. That's the reason why we have to have reasonable budgets, and an important point of why we have to have this time right now. We need to have government funding, and we look forward to working with Republicans to get that done.
The one contested position in the Democratic leadership, the number four spot, was a fight between Jim Clyburn, who resigned from top leadership, but still wanted a role because of his experience and because he'd be the only one in leadership from the South, versus Congressman David Cicilline, who wanted leadership representation for lesbians, gays, and bi, and trans, and queer. The fight ended with assurances to Cicilline that those voices would be heard, and Clyburn getting the post.
Law, Hakeem Jeffries, Jeffrey Clark, Pete Aguilar are well prepared to lead our caucus, and they will be leading. The fact of the matter is, though, we do have, and other parts of the country that have been crying out for a long time to be recognized, be respected, and be included. I represent southern states, and I think it's a mistake for people to keep thinking of the South as being white only. And that's what I keep hearing. The fact that the majority is, the vast majority of American, of black Americans, still live in the South. And I represent rural interests that we are beginning to make a breakthrough with our recent infrastructure bill. We made a significant breakthrough among rural voters, and I want to continue that. And I had long discussions with Hakeem Jeffries. Mm-hmm. He knows exactly what we're trying to do. Drown, 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 drown.
challenge to him, it was an open position that I ran for. And the point of running is I think it is absolutely critical that our leadership reflect the entire diversity of our caucus. I'm chair of the LGBTQ Equality Caucus. And as you know, Jonathan, our community faces tremendous discrimination in this country. In a majority of states, we can still be legally discriminated against. There's been a significant rise in violence against the LGBTQ community, particularly the trans community, and representation matters. And so it was important to me to get a commitment that our leadership team, when it's completely formed, includes a representation from the LGBTQ community. That's why I announced my candidacy. That's why I respect Jim Clyburn a lot. But I was running to represent my community, my state, not to run against him. And I have every confidence that our new leadership team is going to keep that commitment, and we will have a seat at the leadership table.
Compare that to Kevin McCarthy, who still has to endure weeks of cutting deals with fringe Trumpers for plum committee assignments, promise open-end investigations of Democrats and impeachments, just to get a handful of votes, enough to make him speaker. Talk about pandering.
Sean, I do. I'm very honored to have more than 85% of the conference vote for me. That's like winning the primary. Who wins by 85%? So we're going to the floor. And I believe we'll get to 218. Why? Because if we don't, none of those investigations go forward. None of the work that we have put before us. We can't start investigating Mayorkas. We can't secure the border. We can't lower the gasoline price by making us energy independent. We can't give a government and hold them accountable. We can't pass a parent's bill of rights. All of that will stop. The subpoenas can't move out until you elect a speaker. So I believe we will all come together because, Sean, you're right. We need to do this for the American people.
McCarthy, House of Representatives, and Mrs. Roberta McCarthy.
Well, show me the way to the next whiskey bar.
And if you're starting to feel awkward about those holiday work parties you'll be attending,
show me the way to the next whiskey bar.
Maybe you can feel better knowing about the one Kevin McCarthy just had to deal with. President Biden couldn't not invite McCarthy to the state dinner at the White House the other night for French President Macron, and McCarthy couldn't not attend. Imagine the political gossip mongering that would have generated. So McCarthy did attend. He brought his mother as his plus one. And even though it's off mic, McCarthy's entrance included shouted questions about his anti-Biden agenda and how it felt being at a party that Hunter Biden is also attending.
You're going to be at a dinner with Hunter Biden tonight. How does that feel, knowing that many people in your caucus want to investigate?
Well, I'm at dinner with my mom. I'm going to have a great time.
Has the White House told you about plans?
In case you couldn't quite make it out, when McCarthy was asked about being at the same party as Hunter Biden, McCarthy said he was there with his mother and walked on in. It's only a guess, but after that arrival scene, I'd imagine McCarthy headed straight for the open bar. I know that's what I would do. There are a lot of reasons people like New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern. The way she dealt with the terror attack in her country. The way she handled the COVID crisis. And now, the way she handled a question at a joint press conference with the visiting Prime Minister of Finland. A question from a reporter who wanted to know if the two of them were meeting because they're both women of a similar age.
Yeah,
Yeah, a lot of people will be wondering, are you two meeting just because, you know, you're similar in age and, you know, got a lot of, you know, common stuff there, you know, when you got into politics and stuff? Well, can Kiwis actually expect to see more deals between our two countries down the line?
Because my first question is, I wonder whether or not anyone ever asked Barack Obama and John Key if they met because they were of similar age. We, of course, have a higher proportion of men in politics. It's reality, because two women meet, it's not simply because of their gender. Finland exports into New Zealand $199 million worth of exports. They have particular technology in companies like Nokia, biofuels, even basic industrial wares that we use in our buildings. You won't be aware that a large number of our elevators come out of Finland. Agricultural machinery. New Zealand, on the other hand, is trading about $14 million worth, and it's mostly in wine and beef. There is huge potential between us. The EU FTA is a launch pad for that, but we need to make sure that as nations, we don't just simply go through the motions of an FTA ratification. But that as individual nations, we look for the opportunities to build on that economic agreement. So for me, this is timely. Next year, we're looking to progress that FTA. Our meeting today is a chance, alongside the Prime Minister's high-level trade delegation of significant industry leaders, we really leverage the economic opportunities between our two countries. Little would be known about the depth of that relationship or the potential of it, but it's our job to further it, regardless of our gender.
Yeah, we are meeting because we are prime ministers, of course. But as Jacinda said, we have a business delegation with us. We have a lot of things in common, but also a lot of things where we can do much more together. One of those things are technologies. I really worry about the dependencies that we have right now on authoritarian countries when it comes to new technologies, the digital infrastructure in our societies, and also the natural resources that we are dependent on. We have to make sure that we are not building the same traps when it comes to new technologies and digital solutions. That we have right now in Europe when it comes to energy from Russia. So we have to make sure that we have the value chains, that we have the cooperation between democratic countries. Especially when it comes to knowledge, know-how, new technologies. And I think this is one of the main issues that we will continue discussing later today at dinner.
Signs that presidential campaign 24 is just around the corner. You can add this. The political parties are planning the election year calendar of primaries and caucuses, and whether to finally make a big change. During my tenure as political writer of the CBS Evening News, starting in the 80s through the turn of the century, it was just a given that every 4 years we'd go to Iowa for the first in the nation caucuses, and days later to New Hampshire for the first primary. Even back then, by the end of my tenure at CBS News, we began to realize that as pretty as the snow looked on TV from Des Moines and Manchester for our coverage, the party's eventual nominees were taking shape in places like South Carolina. But who could argue with those beauty shots of snowbanks in Iowa? And nothing said presidential election more than a special report on caucus night from our anchor position inside the law library of the state capitol in Des Moines. You can't find a more stately and camera-ready room outside of Hogwarts. And who could forget those anchor stand-up shots in New Hampshire? You know, that one standing on primary night outside that rocky waterfall, where the water pressure is so high the water is still falling into the rocky pool below, despite the snow and icicles at the top of the waterfall. You'd never know that if the camera zoomed out a few feet, you'd see the waterfall was artificial, built by the owners of the inn just outside the inn where the armies of the network news divisions were staying to cover the New Hampshire primary. Yet it's taken another whole generation for the parties to get serious about change, more so for the Democrats, with good reason. Joe Biden just weighed in, wanting South Carolina to go first in the primaries. That's where he made his big comeback, you'll recall, just as he was being counted out, and South Carolina revived his prospects. And you know the rest. But the point is, South Carolina is much more reflective of the diversity of the Democratic Party and the importance of black voters than places like Iowa and New Hampshire. Add to that the complete disaster of the Iowa caucuses last time around in 2020, where all kinds of glitches held up the results for days. Likewise, some Democrats want to move Nevada, Georgia, and Michigan closer to the top of the calendar, as way more reflective of the party than New Hampshire. Complicating matters, New Hampshire state law says New Hampshire has to go first, by 7 days first. And they plan to do that, they say. And so it's no surprise that when the DNC Rules Committee called the new primary calendar to a vote, there were two no votes, Iowa and New Hampshire.
Any further discussion? Seeing and hearing none, I think we're ready to move to a vote on this motion. We'll start with a voice vote. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Would those who said nay like to be recorded by name?
Joanne Dowdell.
Mr. Brennan, you are recorded as a nay vote. Any others?
Joanne Dowdell, New Hampshire.
Ms. Dowdell, you are recorded as a nay vote. Anybody else?
The full DNC will still have to approve the changes and no doubt face objections. sound bites, you can go to the program's Facebook page. What's the frequency, Paul? I'm Paul Fisher.
I am waiting for the next available agent, listening to tiny music on the phone.
Hi, New York. It's Dr. Vossen, the city's doctor. The holidays are my favorite time of year for gathering with our friends and loved ones. So with COVID-19, the flu, and RSV spreading, here are five health tips from me to you so you can enjoy the holidays safely. One, get the new COVID-19 booster. Everyone over 5, and especially those over 65, or who have a chronic health condition, should get the new booster right away. It protects against the variants of COVID-19 making people sick today. 2, get your annual flu shot. You can safely get your flu and COVID-19 shots at the same time. 3, wear a mask in crowds. Masks slow the spread of airborne illness. It's not an all-the-time thing, but for when you're around a lot of people indoors. 4, stay home if you're sick and get tested for COVID-19. Talk to your provider or call 212-COVID-19 for Paxlovid or other treatment options. And 5, and as always,